powers of observation than I, you may take it that I am speaking the truth.
Yes, Holmes.
The exact and literal truth.
Yes, Holmes.
In fact, Watson, I suggest that instead of talking of my brother, I take you to see him.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find it quite an experience.
Is he then your junior?
No, 7 years my senior.
I'm just rather baffled as to why he's unknown.
Oh, believe me, he's very well known in his own circle.
And where is that?
Well, for example, the Diogenes Club.
Can't say I've heard of it.
Huh? The Diogenes Club is quite the queerest club in London. And Brother Mycroft, one of the queerest of men. He's always there from 4:45 to 8:20.
Why doesn't he use his powers for detective work?
No, he's incapable of it.
But I thought you said...
I said he was superior in observation and deduction. Now, if the art of the detective began and ended in an armchair, my brother would be the greatest criminal agent that ever lived.
Mm. No ambition, then?
No ambition. No energy. Well, he won't even go out of his way to verify his own solutions, and would rather be thought wrong than take the trouble to prove himself right. Again and again, I've taken a problem to him and received an explanation which has afterwards proved to be the correct one. And yet, he was absolutely incapable of working out the practical points which must be gone into before a case could be laid before a judge or a jury.
Mm.
Thank you, cabbie. The corner here will do.
So, being professionally involved with crime is certainly not the case with your brother.
It certainly is not. What is to me a means of livelihood is to him the merest hobby of a dilettante. Now, Mycroft lodges here in Pall Mall and walks round the corner into Whitehall every morning where he audits the books in some of the government's departments and then back every evening. From year's end to year's end, he takes no other exercise and is seen nowhere else except only in the Diogenes Club, which is just opposite his rooms.
What sort of place is this Diogenes Club?
Well, there are many men in London, Watson, who, for one reason or another, have no wish for the company of their fellows. Yes, they are certainly not averse to comfortable chairs and the latest periodicals. It's for the convenience of these that the Diogenes Club was started, and it now contains the most unsociable men in town. I have myself found it a very soothing atmosphere. Yeah, and here we are,
uh-huh.
Club itself. And my brother will be waiting for us in the stranger's room. This way, Watson.
Now then, this is the stranger's room.
Ah.
That is, in fact, the only room in the club where one is allowed to speak. And that gentleman sitting in the corner there is Mycroft.
Good Lord.
Yes. As you can see, he's totally different from me in appearance.
Stout, you mean, Holmes?
I think he would prefer the word... corpulent. Ah, he's seen us.
Sherlock, dear boy, how nice to see you. And this, of course, is...
My constant companion and dear friend, Dr. Watson.
Of course. Delighted to meet you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Now, let us go and sit by the window. The chairs are sheer delight. Of course, I hear of Sherlock everywhere since you became his chronicler, Dr. Watson.
You're very kind. I hope I do him justice.
In fact, Sherlock, my dear, I expected to see you around last week to consult me over that Manor House case.
So why should I do that, Mycroft?
Because I thought you might be a little out of your depth.
On the contrary, I solved it.
It was Adams, of course.
Yes, it was Adams.
I was sure of it from the first. Now then, make yourselves comfortable.
Thank you.
This is my favourite spot. Through this window, I see the world go by. I mean, just look at all the magnificent types out there.
Not a very happy lot, though, I have to say.
I, on the other hand, enjoy myself just sitting back and watching them. See that chap out there? What do you make of him?
Nothing at all, I'm afraid. What should I?
You, Sherlock? What do you make of him?
An old soldier, I perceive.
Very recently discharged, I'd say.
Served in India, I see.
As a non-commissioned officer.
Royal Artillery, I fancy.
And a widower.
But with a child.
Children? Children.
Oh, come. come now. This is a little too much.
Surely it is not too hard to say that a man with that varying expression of authority and sunbaked skin is a soldier and more than a private not long from India.
That he has not long left the service is shown by the boots he is still wearing.
When he moved away to look in that shop window, he had not the cavalry stride. Yet he wore his hat on one side, as is shown by the lighter skin on that side of his brow. His weight is against being a sapper. He is in the artillery.
Then, of course, his complete mourning shows that he has lost someone very dear. The fact that he is doing his own shopping looks as though it were his wife. You perceive also that he has been buying things for children. There is a rattle which shows that one of them is very young. The wife probably died in childbirth. That he has a picture book under his arm shows there is another child to be thought of.
You see, Watson, hereditary.
By the way, Sherlock, I have something quite after your own heart. A most singular problem submitted my judgment. I really hadn't the energy to follow it up, save in a very incomplete fashion. However, it gave me the basis for some pleasing speculation. If you would care to hear the facts.
Mycroft, as well you know, I should be delighted.
I've asked a certain Mr. Mellas to join us. He lodges on the floor above me, and I have some slight acquaintance with him which led him to come to me in his perplexity. Mr. Mellas is a Greek by extraction and a remarkable linguist. He earns his living partly as interpreter in the law courts and partly by acting as guide to any wealthy Orientals who may visit the Northumberland Avenue hotels. And even as I speak, here he comes. I will leave him to tell you his remarkable story himself. I feel in the need for a certain refreshment. I wish you well with the problem. And it was nice to have met you, Dr. Watson.
And an education meeting you, sir.
Farewell, Mycroft. Perhaps we shall meet again soon.
You always know where I am. Mr. Mellas, excuse my leaving, but I have a rather important matter with which I have to deal.
Certainly, I understand.
My brother sitting there is agog to hear your tale.
Mr. Holmes, I am very pleased to meet you, very pleased. And thank you for giving me of your time.
I'm afraid, Mr. Mellas, that my name is Dr. Watson, the man to
I am the man to whom you wish to speak, Mr. Mellas, and Dr. Watson here is my close friend and companion.
I apologize for the mistake.
No apology needed, I assure you.
I can't say I'm happy to be thought I look more like Mycroft's brother than you, Holmes.
I am anxious to hear your story, Mr. Mellas.
Of course, of course. I must say that I do not believe that the police credit me on my word.
That, I assure you, is of no matter. I usually find that what the police believe or do not believe is of no consequence. Your story, please. I am all attention.
Well, then, it was Monday, 2 days ago, that it all happened. I'm an interpreter. I interpret all languages, but as I am Greek by birth, it is with that particular tongue that I am most associated. For many years, I have been the chief Greek interpreter in London, and my name is well known in the hotels. It happens not infrequently that I am sent for at strange hours by foreigners who have got into difficulties. It was no surprise, therefore, when on Monday evening there was a knock at my door.
Yes? Who is it?
My name is Latimer. I wonder if I may have a word with you.
Come in, please.
You are Mr. Mellas?
That is so.
The Greek interpreter?
Correct. But please, won't you...
Excuse me, Mr. Mellas, but I don't have time for social graces.
But, my dear Mr...
I have a carriage waiting for us outside.
A carriage? But where...
Please, Mr. Mellas, time is of the essence.
But aren't I at least entitled to some explanation?
Yes, of course. But I'll explain everything to you on the way there.
The way where?
Please, we must go.
Now, a little explanation would not be out of order, I think.
All I can say to you is that a Greek friend has come to see us upon business, and as he can speak nothing but his own tongue, the services of an interpreter are indispensable. Your name was recommended to us.
Thank you. But are my services really needed at such speed?
I'm afraid so.
And where are we going?
The house to which we're going is some little way off, in Kensington.
Kensington? If you'll forgive me saying so, we seem to be taking a rather roundabout way of getting there. It would have been far better had we... What are you doing?
Just pulling the blinds down at the windows.
But why?
So you don't know where you're going.
I don't understand.
And believe me, it's better that you don't. It might possibly be inconvenient if you could find your way back there again.
I... I don't think I wish to go further with this affair.
You have no choice, I'm afraid.
What?
Try to resist, and I'll use such force on you as you will regret your decision.
My God. You're kidnapping me.
Call it what you will, Mr. Mallows. However, on arrival at our destination, your task will be a simple one, and you will then be paid and released. Now, as the journey will take some time, I suggest you simply sit back and relax.
Relax? In a carriage with shuttered windows and a man who threatens violence? Impossible.
Just do your best, Mr. Mallows. Otherwise, we'll both find the journey something of a needless strain.
This is really very extraordinary conduct. I presume you know that what you are doing is quite illegal.
Yes, yes, yes. Something of a liberty, no doubt. But as I say, we'll make it up to you. I warn you, however, Mr. Mallows, that if at any time tonight you attempt to raise an alarm or do anything which is against my interest, you will find it a very serious thing.
I'm finding it a very serious thing already.
And I beg you to remember that no one knows where you are.
No more do I.
Just remember that while you're in the carriage or in my home, you are equally in my power. Now, as I say, sit back, relax.
And so, Mr. Holmes, we drove for nearly 2 hours without me having the least clue as to where we were going.
Didn't the carriage wheels against the varying surfaces give some instruction?
Well, sometimes the rattle of stones told of a paved causeway, and at others our smooth, silent course suggested asphalt.
Hmm.
But save for this variation in sound, there was nothing at all in the remotest way helpful in guessing as to where I was. However, it was 7:15 when we left Pall Mall, and my watch showed that it was 9:10 when we at last came to a standstill. Latimer then removed the blinds from the windows.
And what did you manage to see?
Very little, I'm afraid. I was rushed from the carriage, and in seconds I found myself inside the house.
But would you say it was in the countryside?
Well, I did get a glimpse of trees and a lawn, but whether it was private grounds or bona fide country, I couldn't say.
So you then entered the hut?
Yes. There was a coloured lamp inside, which was turned so low I could see little in the hall, save that it was hung with pictures. Then a door opened, and a very mean-looking individual came towards us. Although, in many ways, he could be described as a laughing man, owing to the fact that he had a frequent, nervous laugh.
And what did this laughing man say?
Well, well. And is this Mr. Mellis, Harold?
This is he.
Well done, well done. No ill will, Mr. Mellis, I hope, but we could not get on without you. If you deal fair with us, you'll not regret it. But if you try any tricks, then God help you.
What do you want with me?
Only to ask a few questions of a Greek gentleman who is visiting us and to let us know his answers. But say no more than you were told to say, or you had better never to have been born. So, Mr. Mellis, this way. You too, Harold. We'll soon get this matter settled. Here we are. And there is the gentleman of whom we wish you to ask some questions.
My God!
Do not concern yourself as to his welfare.
But why is his face crisscrossed with sticking plaster, even his mouth?
Have you the writing slate there, Harold?
Yes, it's here. And I've untied his hands.
Give him the pencil, then. Now then, Mr. Mellis, you are to ask him the questions and he will write down the answers. Ask him first if he is prepared to sign the papers.
Well, Mr. Holmes, in spite of the extraordinary situation, I did as I was asked, and the poor devil wrote down never. I asked him if there were any conditions that would change his mind, and he wrote, only if I see her married in my presence by a Greek priest whom I know. When I informed what I describe as the laughing man of these answers, he gave one of his venomous laughs and said, say to him he knows what to expect then. I can only say that the man appeared to care nothing for himself. Again and again I was told to ask him if he would give in and sign the documents. Again and again I had the same reply. Then I had a happy thought.
Hmm?
I took to adding on little sentences of my own to each question. No one except the poor man and myself knew what was happening. Our half-spoken, half-written conversation went something like this. You can do nothing by this obstinacy. Who are you?
I care not. I am a stranger in London.
Your fate is in your own hands. How long have you been here?
So be it. 3 weeks.
The property can never be yours. What ails you?
I'll never give it to villains. They are starving me.
If you sign, you can go free. What house is this?
I'll never sign. I don't know.
You are not doing her any service. What is your name?
Let me hear her say so.
Kratithis. You'll see her if you sign. Where are you from?
Then I'll never see her.
Athens. Another 5 minutes, Mr. Holmes, and I would have wormed out the story under their very noses.
So what was the happening that prevented your worming, as you describe it?
Well, unfortunately, at that moment, the door suddenly opened and a woman came into the room.
Harold, please, I could not stay away longer. It is so lonely up there with only... Oh, my God! It's Paul!
These last words she spoke in Greek, and as she did so, the man who had brought me there grabbed her and began pushing her from the room. At the same time, the man I had been interrogating managed to pull some of the sticking plaster from his lips.
Sophie! Sophie! Get her out! Save me!
No! No!
Let me near her!
No!
And you!
No!
Get! Come out of here! No! Come on! Quick! Answer!
For a moment, I was left alone. I thought, perhaps this is my chance to have a look around, get some kind of clue as to where I was. Before I could do anything, however, the door opened again.
Oh, dear. I must ask you to excuse all the drama. But as you perceive, we have taken you into our confidence over some very private business. We would not have bothered you, but our friend who began these negotiations, a friend who, of course, speaks Greek, has been... forced to return to the East. It was quite necessary for us to find someone to take his place, and we were fortunate in hearing of your powers. Now then, Mr. Mellis, you are free to go.
Well,
five sovereigns, which will, I hope, be a sufficient fee for your pains. Well, but remember, if you speak to a living soul about this, one human soul, well, may God have mercy on your soul. We shall know if you do speak of it. We have our means of information. Now, as I say, that is all. You will find the carriage waiting for you outside, and my friend Harold will see you on your way. But do remember that silence is golden, if you value your life.
I was hurried through the hall and into the vehicle, obtaining once more that momentary glimpse of trees and the garden. Mr. Latimer took his place beside me once more, and we travelled in silence for what seemed an age. The whole thing was most extraordinary.
I had arrived at that conclusion myself, Mr. Mellas. Then what happened?
Well, after what seemed an interminable distance, the carriage suddenly pulled up.
Well, Mr. Mellas, this is it. You will now get down. I am sorry to leave you so far from your house. Again, may I say that to speak of this evening will be greatly to your disadvantage, and any attempt to follow the carriage in any way whatsoever... can only lead to injury to yourself.
I think your message is quite clear, Mr. Latimer.
Good. Then I wish you good night.
Well, this is a very pretty state of affairs.
Hello?
Hello? Who's that?
Are you all right, sir?
I'm not sure. Are you a railway porter?
Well, that's right, sir. I'm on my way home.
Where am I?
Are you sure you're all right, sir?
Yes, yes. Where is this place?
Wandsworth Common, sir.
Oh. Can I get a train into town?
Well, you can if you walk a mile or so into Clapham Junction. Bit of luck. You'll still be in time for the last train to Victoria.
Thank you so much for your help.
Not at all, sir. Good night.
So, that was the end of my adventure, Mr. Holmes. I had no idea where I had been or who it was I'd met. All I know is that there is foul play going on, and I want to help that poor, unhappy man I interviewed.
Yeah.
I told the whole story to Mr. Mycroft Holmes the following morning and subsequently the police.
And what steps were taken?
Well, I did place an advertisement in the Daily News.
Ah, Mycroft, you returned. Mr. Mellas has just finished telling us his story.
So I anticipated.
And having heard it once, you had no wish to sit through it again?
No need to be embarrassing, my dear. Any thoughts?
Not as yet. The matter does have some...
distinguishing features?
Exactly. Tell me, Mycroft, what did your advertisement in the Daily News say?
Well, if my memory serves me right, I said, anybody supplying any information as to the whereabouts of a Greek gentleman named Paul Critidis from Athens, who is unable to speak English, will be rewarded. A similar reward paid to anyone giving information about a Greek lady whose first name is Sophie.
Your memory is perfect.
Thank you.
I have the letter here to prove it.
In fact, that advertisement went into all the dailies, not just the News.
And no answer?
None.
How about the Greek legation?
I inquired. They know nothing.
Then how about a wire to the head of the Athens police?
Oh, my dear, it's so plain that you're the one in the family with all the energy. Well, take the case up by all means, and let me know if you do any good.
Certainly, I'll let you know, and Mr. Mellas also. In the meantime, Mr. Mellas, I should be on my guard if I were you. But of course, having seen the advertisements, they now know you've betrayed them. You see, Watson, our evening has by no means been wasted.
An interesting character, that brother of yours, Holmes.
Yes, some of my most interesting cases have come to me in this way through Mycroft.
And you both think this one has some distinguishing features?
Oh, indeed it has.
You have hopes of solving it?
Well, knowing as much as we do, it will be singular indeed if we fail to uncover the rest.
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, surely you yourself have formed some theory which will explain the facts to which we've listened.
Well, in a vague way, yes.
Yeah, one moment, Watson. I intend to enter this telegraph office and send off a few wires. In the meantime, see if you can get a cab for us.
Are you interested in my theory, Holmes?
What? Yes, do carry on over.
Well, knowing as much as we do, as you said, it seems to me obvious that this Greek girl named Sophie has been carried off by that chap Harold Latimer. He was obviously intent on getting her money.
Carried off, you say? Carried off from where?
Athens, perhaps?
No, I think not. This Harold Latimer could not speak a word of Greek. The lady, on the other hand, could speak English fairly well. Inference, she had been in England for some time, but he had not been in Greece.
In that case, let us presume that she had come on a visit to England and that Harold Latimer had somehow persuaded her to come away with him.
That is more probable.
Then her brother, that I fancy was the relationship between her and the fellow bound and gagged, came out from Greece to interfere in the matter. He imprudently puts himself at the mercy of Latimer and his associates.
You refer to the man with the unfortunate laugh.
Yes. They seize him and use violence towards him in order to make him sign some papers handing over the girl's fortune, of which he may be trustee, to them.
Oh, jolly good, Watson, jolly good.
This he refuses to do. In order to negotiate with him, they have to get an interpreter. Having tried one man, they next land upon a Mr. Mellas. The girl is not told of the arrival of her brother and finds out quite by accident when she enters the room unexpectedly.
Excellent, Watson. Ah, here we are. Thank you, cabbie. This will do. Hey, now, my dear fellow, I'm quite impressed. Now, I really fancy that you're not far from the truth. Well, we seem to hold all the cards, and we have only to fear some sudden act of violence on their part. Now, I believe that if they give us time, then we have them.
But how do we find out where the house is? Well, where it lies exactly?
So our conjecture is correct, and the girl's name is, or was, Sophie Critidis, we shall have no difficulty in tracing her. Yeah, the brother, unfortunately, is a complete stranger to the country. Now, it's clear that some time has elapsed since this Harold Latimer established relations with the girl, for her brother in Greece has had time to hear of it and come across here. Now, if they'd been living in the same place during this time, it's probable that we shall have an answer to Mycroft's advertisement. Well, home at last.
Come along in, Sherlock.
Mycroft?
Yes, 'tis I. You didn't expect such energy from me, did you?
Why are you here?
Somehow, this case attracts me.
Well, how did you get here?
Actually, I passed you in a hansom while you were going into a telegraph office. But please, make yourselves at home.
Thank you, my dear. How kind.
Now then, there have been some new developments.
There's been an answer to the advertisement?
Exactly.
Ah.
It came, in fact, within moments of your leaving.
To what effect?
Here it is, written with a J pen on royal cream paper by a middle-aged man with a weak constitution. Sir, it says, in answer to your advertisement of today's date, I beg to inform you that I know the young lady in question very well. If you should care to call upon me, I could give you some particulars as to her painful history. She is living at present at the Myrtles, Beckenham. Yours faithfully, J. Davenport. He writes from Lower Brixton. Do you think that we might drive to him, Sherlock, and learn these particulars?
Mycroft, the brother's life is more important than the sister's story. I think we should call at Scotland Yard for Inspector Gregson and go straight out to Beckenham. We know the brother's life's in danger, and every hour may be vital.
Good Lord, Holmes, are we off again already?
We are indeed. And we'd better pick up Mr. Mellas on the way. We may need an interpreter. I'll send the boy for a four-wheeler, and we'll be on our way.
Wonderful to observe him, isn't it, Watson? One moment, I'll get him.
Tell him not to bother with coats and such. Just get him straight in here.
Try to relax for a second, Sherlock.
Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Good evening, Mrs. B. I've just come to collect Mr. Mellas.
I'm afraid he's gone out, sir.
Oh, dear. Can you tell me where?
Oh, I don't know, sir. I only know he drove away with a gentleman in a carriage.
And could you describe this gentleman?
He was a little gentleman with glasses. Thin in the face he was, sir.
And he gave no name?
No, sir. He was quite a pleasant gentleman, though, in many ways. Oh, yes, quite pleasant.
Was he, indeed?
Yes, sir. He had this funny way of laughing all the time he was talking.
This is getting very serious. These men have got hold of Mellas again. He's a man of no physical courage, as they're well aware from their experience the other night. Whoever called on him was able to terrorize him the instant he got into his presence.
Yes, no doubt they want his professional services. But having used him, they may be inclined to punish him for what they will regard as his treachery.
Indeed, he's in great danger. But I'm inclined to think that
we ought to take the train to Beckenham, as it's quicker than this carriage.
The words right out of my mouth, as usual, brother. First, however, it's Scotland Yard and Inspector Gregson. Inspector, I have to warn you that I'm in grave danger of losing my temper.
I thought you already had.
I mean, lose it completely.
And what good would that do?
Yeah, Inspector, how long is it since I arrived at Scotland Yard?
I've no idea.
Well, then I'll tell you. 1 hour and 2 minutes. All that time wasted in trying to get you to sign that blessed piece of paper.
Now, be fair, Mr. Holmes. You couldn't even get hold of me for the first half hour or so.
Nevertheless, Inspector, please, I beg you, sign that form so that we can get into the house. Now,
take it easy. You'll have a heart attack.
Don't you realise a man may be dead because of your refusal to sign?
Now, when did I say that I refused exactly? It's just that matters of this kind have to be studied. We can't go letting any Tom, Dick or Harry into people's houses, can we?
This is unbearable. I shall have to report it.
Relax, sir. I'll sign. But you do understand how careful we have to be. Ah, tea. Just the very thing.
Well, Inspector, at long, long last, the Myrtles.
Not a very inviting-looking place, I must say.
Well, let's all get out and begin, shall we?
I think we can send the carriage away, don't you, Sherlock?
Yeah, good idea. Out we go, then.
Yeah.
You're asleep, are you, Watson?
Thoughtful, Holmes. Thoughtful.
All right, cabbie. That will be all. We won't require your services further.
Right, good night, sir.
Well, now. What have we here?
A deserted house, by the look of it.
And the windows are certainly all dark.
Yes, our birds have flown and the nest empty.
Why are you so sure?
Oh, you see just there. A carriage heavily loaded with luggage has passed this way during the past hour.
Well, I can see the wheel tracks, but where does the luggage come in?
Well, you see...
May I, dear boy?
Yeah.
You see, Inspector... You may be observing the same wheel tracks going the other way, but the outward-bound ones are very much deeper, so much so that, as my brother says, there was obviously considerable weight on the carriage.
My brother is, of course, perfectly correct.
Always think you know the answer, don't you, sir?
Well, Why, not much point in thinking one knows, Inspector. The trick is to know one knows.
I wonder, Holmes, if I might whisper Norbury in your ear.
What?
Norbury.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Watson.
Now then, the door.
Well, it's not going to be an easy one to force by the look of it. Still, if we can't get anyone to hear us, we'll give it a try.
I've got this window open.
Have you indeed? Well, it's a mercy that you're on the side of the force and not against it, Mr. Holmes. Well, I think under the circumstances we may enter without an invitation.
Come on now, come on.
Just one moment now while I light my lamp. There. Now, what have we here? Two glasses, an empty brandy bottle, and the remains of a meal.
What was that?
What?
Oh, wait. It's upstairs. Come on.
That's what come on.
It's coming from in there. The door's locked.
Yeah.
Stand aside, Watson. I'll fling myself at it, see what happens. That's what happens, nothing.
Oh, let me try.
No, let me try, my dear Inspector. My bulk on this occasion is somewhat in my favour.
Oh, good man. Now, I'm going in. It's charcoal. Give it time, it'll clear.
Oh, God, what did you say it was?
My brother said it was charcoal, Inspector. Not the most pleasant of aromas.
Then back from the door. It'll get better.
But will my shoulder, I ask myself.
Did you see anything, Holmes? Ah, I didn't have time, I'm afraid.
Yes, so what now?
Well, so now I'll go back in and try and get the window open.
Do you need help?
Now, thank you, but no. We don't get crashing into each other. On the other hand, you could hold your lamp at the door. It right. May give me some light. Right then. Here I go.
No, take care. Don't take any risks.
I'll do my best, Inspector. Roger! What's happening, Holmes? I've got the window open.
Rather good at opening windows, isn't it?
There's a sort of tripod thing here that the fumes are coming out of.
Come out yourself, Sherlock. Give yourself some air.
No, I'm throwing you out of the window. Holmes, for heaven's sake, you'll suffocate. It's gone. I've thrown it out.
What can you see?
There are two bodies here in the corner. Go on, don't come in now, but be quick. Yes, they're tied up. Just drag them out. Just drag them. That's it. Come on. Yeah, that's it.
Oh, good Lord, Holmes. Look at the state of them.
Yeah, it's not surprising, really.
Blue-lipped, swollen, congested faces. Poor devils.
But who are they?
Who can tell?
Are they alive, Doctor?
Well, this one certainly isn't. Eyes popping out of his head, dead some time.
Excuse me interfering, but isn't that sticking plaster around his mouth?
Yes, you're right. So this must be...
The Greek gentleman who was given such an appalling time. The brother of Sophie. But he came too late. Pity.
Yes, and this other poor soul must be mad at.
Could be anybody by the look of him.
Seems they gave him quite a beating up before subjecting him to that dreadful charcoal poison. Well, no wonder we didn't recognize him.
Nasty business, Holmes, very nasty. Wait!
What is it?
He's still alive! Malus is still alive!
Look, his eyes.
You're right. Let's get him downstairs, see what we can do.
I know precisely what we can do. Ammonia and brandy.
Exactly.
I could do with a little brandy myself, as a matter of fact.
And how are you feeling now, Mr. Malus?
I have to confess, dreadful.
Yes, yes. But alive.
Yes, thanks to you and your friend.
Unfortunately, we were not in time to save the other gentleman.
Oh, I am so sorry.
Well, now, if you're feeling up to it, perhaps you could tell me what happened.
Well, Watson, my dear fellow, the story he told was very much as we had thought. That laughing gentleman, as we know, called at Merlass's home and threatened instant death if he did not come with him at once to Beckenham and once more attempt to get the Greek gentleman, Paul Kratidis, to sign the papers. Death was threatened to both if the papers were not signed. In spite of everything, Fratides refused to sign. Then Merlas was reproached in no uncertain manner for his treachery with regard to the newspaper advertisement. He was then stunned with a heavy blow and remembers nothing more until he began to come round and found us all bending over him. Yes, it's a great shame we were too late to help poor Paul Kratidis. After coming all the way from Greece to save his sister from Latimer and his laughing friend, he deserved a better fate.
And what do you suppose has been the fate of the sister?
Well, who knows? Well, obviously, she's still a prisoner of Latimer and his associate, and they've taken her away somewhere.
And that's that.
Yes, it appears so, yes.
Not a very satisfactory ending to things, really.
No, indeed not. Oh, we can only hope that time provides a better curtain.
Oh, Watson. A park in London. Found a bird. Ideal day.
You're certainly in a very good mood today, Holmes. It's a pleasure to see it.
Oh, it's one of some shining picnic with a dear friend. Moments to treasure.
It's just that since that Greek interpreter business, you've been rather low in spirit.
Yes, Watson, but now I have an ending to that particular story.
What do you mean, Holmes? Come on, what have you heard? Explain.
Certainly.
You're mistaken, you know, if you think you can get away with what you have done. And you don't have to keep that gun pointed at me.
Just keep your mouth shut. My friend is sleeping.
And I'm glad. That laugh of his drives me to distraction.
Quiet, I said. And don't look at me like that.
You killed my brother. How should I look?
And I'll kill you if you go on talking.
Very brave, aren't you?
You think I won't kill you?
Oh, I'm sure you could. You've killed once, you could do it again. That's the difference between us, you see. I could never kill anyone, whatever the situation.
Yes, you could. Don't fool yourself.
Oh, no. That's where you are wrong. I don't have that will in me, thank God.
You think you're something special, don't you?
No. I'm not special, just a human being.
Are you telling me that if somehow you managed to get hold of the gun, you wouldn't use it? Not even to save your own life? Not even to revenge the murder of your own brother?
No, never. Sorry to disappoint you.
I don't believe you, Sophie.
That's because we are different people, and I truly thank God for it.
All right, then. Look, I'll give you the gun. I'll give it to you. How about that?
I don't want it. Sorry, I don't want it.
No, take it.
I said I don't want it. You can't make me what I am not.
Take it. And then, as you're such an angel, you can give it back to me, can't you?
I don't want to even touch it. Keep the damn thing.
There. There we are. It's yours. A gift from me to you. Now then, my angel, let me see you give it back. Come on. Come on. Impress me.
What? Oh. What's happening?
And now it's your turn, my laughing friend.
God, you've killed him.
That's right. Sorry to waken you. Still, you can have a nice, long sleep now.
Oh, no, no, wait.
And now you've had your last laugh. Never trust a Greek bearing gifts.
And is that story true?
I received it from Sophie herself. She contacted me a day ago. I see no reason to disbelieve her.
But why did she tell you?
Personal favor, she said, to tidy things up. She's now gone back home to attempt a new start to her life. I wished her well. So, for a day or two, I can now relax and enjoy myself.
You realize, of course, Holmes, that we really should report her confession to the police.
Which confession is that, Watson?
The one the Greek girl made to you.
Which Greek girl is that?
Oh, I see. Good. There are certainly times, my dear Holmes, when you prefer to adopt a certain loss of memory.
I don't know what you are talking about.
See what I mean?
Oh, don't spoil the picnic, Watson. We're having such a lovely day.
You're still wrong, though, aren't you?
Well, now, as you would say, old friend, it's rather open to discussion. But I say, let's open the hamper.
In The Greek Interpreter, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. With Peter Policarpo as Mr. Mellas, John Hartley as Mycroft Holmes, Peter Wickham as Latimer, Gordon Reed as the Laughing Man, Joanna Myers as Sophie, Neil Roberts as her brother, and Ronald Herdman as Inspector Gregson. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Greek Interpreter was dramatized for radio by Jerry Jones and directed by Enid Williams.
My house is lonely. It stands on the southern slope of the Sussex Downs, commanding a great view of the Channel. I, my old housekeeper, and my bees have the estate all to ourselves. It is, therefore, a most singular thing that a problem as abstruse and unusual as any I've faced in my long professional career should have come to me after my retirement and be brought to my very door.
The Lion's Mane by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Bert Cools. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. The Lion's Mane.
At this time, the good Watson had passed almost beyond my ken. An occasional weekend visit was the most that I ever saw of him.
Watson, my dear fellow.
How are you, Holmes?
Perfectly delighted to see you, my dear fellow. Perfectly delighted. Wedlock suits you, Watson. You put on 7.5 pounds since I saw you last.
7, actually?
Indeed. I should have thought a little more. Just a trifle more, I fancy. But I also infer that you're in danger of losing it again if your wife remains away from home much longer.
Indeed. She returns tomorrow from a visit. But how did you know?
How do I know? I observed it. How do I know that you've moved your dressing table to the other side of your room?
Holmes, if you had lived a few centuries ago, they would certainly have burned you alive.
Whereas you, my dear doctor, would be as safe as houses in any century you choose. Lucky man.
Tell me how you knew.
Ha! Simplicity itself. Face badly shaved on your right side, used to be your left. You couldn't well move your window, must have moved your dressing table.
Yes, by Jove. But how the deuce did you know that my wife was away?
Ha! Where the deuce is your second waistcoat button? And what the deuce is yesterday's carnation doing in today's lapel? Oh, this is elementary, my dear Watson. Child's play of deduction. Yes, it's rather good, isn't it?
You think so?
Well, don't you?
I do practically nothing but ask questions. When I'm in it at all.
Bide your time, Watson. You'll get your moment in the spotlight one of these days. Show me that programme.
Here.
Yes, thank you. Sherlock Holmes, a drama in 4 acts.
I thought you'd hate it.
Oh, yeah.
You were always saying how you loathe being in the public gaze.
Yes, when I was working, hardly matters now. You're publishing the stories again, aren't you?
Yes, that's true.
Well, I don't see why someone else shouldn't write a play about me.
Us.
Us, yes, us. Mm. You say he plays me as well.
Oh, yes.
Well, I've always admired versatility. What's he like, this William Gillette person?
Well, he does look like you, I suppose.
Yes, but does he get below the surface?
He's very good at the detective business and the action scenes. It's rather a good fight.
But the rest?
It is a family entertainment, Holmes.
So this American gentleman isn't parading my less attractive faults for the world to see?
Not all of them, no.
Oh, good. How does it end? With me triumphant, I suppose.
Holmes.
My dear fellow.
I was going to warn you.
Yes, hear me out, hear me out. Holmes throws the photographs down to the desk and turns to face Alice. Now that you see me in my true light, Miss Faulkner, we have nothing left to say but good night and goodbye, which you ought to be very glad to do.
Oh, that's excellent. It's very good, very good.
Even my supposed friendship for you was a pretense, a sham. Alice, I don't believe you. Why not? From the way you speak, from the way you look, you're not the only one who can tell things from small details. Your powers of observation are somewhat remarkable, Miss Faulkner, and your deduction concerning my friendship for you is quite correct. I suppose, indeed, I know that I love you.
Well, well. It's fascinating.
You're not angry?
Should I be?
It's hardly in character. Is it?
As you said, most good family entertainment. The obligatory happy ending.
Oh, well. Retirement certainly changed you.
Indeed.
Oh, yes. I don't think I've seen you this relaxed. Not for years.
Relaxed? Yes, that's the very word.
What's funny?
Elementary, my dear Watson. That'll be good, don't you think? Nice turn of phrase.
Makes my character sound like an idiot.
Oh, so you won't be using it in one of your stories?
Certainly not.
Oh.
Besides, I'm not in the habit of stealing material from other writers. I'm perfectly capable of making up memorable phrases of my own, thank you very much.
Of course you are. Mm. Thank you for those Strand magazines, by the way.
Oh, you got them, good. What did you think of the stories?
My housekeeper loved them.
And you, of course, never gave them a glance.
No time, I'm afraid.
No, no.
Do you know, I'm busier now than I ever was before.
Is that a fact?
Oh, yes.
We're not jealous of you at Scotland Yard. No, sir. We're very proud of you.
And if you come down tomorrow, there's not a man from the oldest inspector to the youngest constable who wouldn't be glad to shake you by the hand.
Yes, I thought you'd like that bit. Sorry you were too busy to read it.
Oh, yes, and while we're on the subject...
Go on.
In the empty house...
Yes.
About when I was in Tibet, you say I spent some time with a head lama.
Oh, that's what you told me.
One L.
I beg your pardon?
Should only have one L. L-A-M-A. One L. You spelled it with two.
I did nothing of the sort.
Well, if not you, the typesetter at the Strand.
Oh, dear.
You're familiar with the word.
Enough to know that it's not exactly appropriate. An animal, isn't it?
Sort of mountain goat, popular for its skin and its milk and given to congregating in small herds. I don't believe they have heads.
Of course they have heads.
Not in the hierarchical sense, they don't.
I spent some time with a head mountain goat. Oh, God.
I wouldn't worry about it too much.
No?
No. I doubt if his supreme radiance will be offended. I don't think the Strand sells many copies in Tibet.
Ah, oh, the air here is wonderful.
Yes, isn't it?
And that view.
You can see the entire bay from this spot.
Glorious.
And the beach. Just a short walk away, plus the long descent down the cliff path, of course.
Does anyone ever go there?
Oh, certainly, yes, I do, for one.
You do? To the beach?
There are places where the water's trapped between tides, natural swimming pools.
Don't think I ever imagined you as a swimmer.
Did I ever show you my trophies?
No, no, you didn't.
Remiss of me. Of course, it was a long time ago.
Was it?
Well, one doesn't lose the knack. It's a remarkably agreeable pastime.
You know, Holmes, in many ways I envy you.
And in others?
I don't mean to be rude.
My dear chap.
But, well, not a life I could lead. Not for long. The isolation would get to me.
To each his own.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Of course. But do you ever see anyone?
Yes, from time to time.
Who? People who get lost. You don't seem to be over-endowed with neighbours.
It's quite a large place, about half a mile away, that direction.
You wouldn't know it.
No, I'm well hidden here. A geographical quirk.
So who lives there?
An assortment of people. It's a school.
School? Right out here in the middle of nowhere.
Quite a famous school, actually. The Gables.
Oh, never heard of it, I'm afraid. How big is it?
Fairly select. A score of pupils, only a few masters, run by one Howard Stackhurst.
Never heard of him either.
Oh, shame on you, Doctor. He's an excellent all-round scholar.
Oh, you know him well, do you?
We've been friendly ever since I came here.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. Drop in on each other sometimes. In the evenings.
I see.
You haven't mentioned my garden.
It's, very nice.
I'm surprised that I've taken it up.
Well, you must admit, it's not the first thing that leaps into mind where you're concerned.
Has no knowledge of practical gardening.
Oh, please. Not that damned list again. Must be nearly 20 years ago.
24.
24. Good Lord. Practically a quarter of a century.
Yeah?
And you still know it by heart?
Some of it. I spent a good deal of my time thinking about the past.
Holmes, that can be an unhealthy sort of practice.
Ever the doctor.
Of course.
Well, I'm grateful for your concern, but in this case, it's unfounded. I give at least as much time to other matters.
Such as?
Well, look around you. Nature, the natural world, infinite diversity in infinite combinations. What could be more fascinating? Come on.
Where are we going?
It's time for you to meet my fellow students. Open Channel D.
Channel D? Open.
Excellent. Now, we wait.
Nothing's happening.
Patience, Doctor. Their sense of time isn't the same as ours, or yours at least.
What did you mean, fellow students?
Well, sometimes I'm convinced that they're learning far more about me than I am about them.
Oh, really? I never quite believed it, you know.
Oh, I know.
I mean, bees.
You shouldn't have been surprised. They really are the most fascinating study and the most demanding.
Oh, well, I'm not about to argue with you. What's supposed to be happening?
Well, by opening that particular channel, you'll double the number of exits from this hive.
Yes.
The question is, how long will it take them to realize the fact? And once they do know, what will happen?
And that's the sort of thing you do all day?
All night, too, sometimes. Martha's quite convinced that I'm mad.
A woman of great perception, your housekeeper. Oh.
This kind of work does call for a particular temperament, I suppose. Oh. Pass me the cover, will you?
Here.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, don't be. The conditions aren't ideal anyway. You know, your visit was singularly ill-timed.
It was?
Yeah, she really should have been here 10 days ago.
Huh?
Yeah, it's excitement you're after.
Why, what happened? Some of your bees escaped, did they?
Not exactly. There was a murder. The victim's name was Fitzroy Macpherson. He was the science master at the Gable School. Watson, are you listening?
I can't believe you didn't mention this the minute I arrived.
I wanted you to settle in first.
Settle in? I'm only here for the weekend, for goodness sake. It's back to work on Monday for some of us, you know.
Well, I'm sorry, but you still have all day today. Well, that should be ample.
Ample for what?
Well, for you to solve the mystery, of course.
What on earth are you talking about?
I gave the matter a lot of thought.
Oh, yes?
And it seemed to me that we had three alternatives. One, I could simply tell you what happened.
I presume you rejected that one immediately as being far too straightforward.
Absolutely. Two, I could write it up and present you with a manuscript to read on your journey home.
You could write it up.
Why not?
The way you wrote up the adventure of the Blanched Soldier?
Perhaps not exactly like that, no.
Watson has some remarkable characteristics of his own. A companion to whom each development comes as a perpetual surprise and to whom the future is always a closed book is indeed an ideal helpmate.
I see I'm not the only one with a good memory.
You just wait until it gets published. The letters will roll in.
Three. I could give you the basic facts, show you the evidence, take you round to the sites, and you could try to solve it.
Are you saying that it hasn't been worked out yet?
No. I've cleared the whole thing up.
So you're proposing that we traipse around together and I make a fool of myself while you look on, is that it?
No, of course not. If you'd rather, we'll forget the whole thing. It's just that...
What?
Well, I hoped you might rather enjoy it. I thought it might be... fun.
Fun?
I didn't think that my bees would grip you for very long. I didn't want you to be bored.
Oh, my dear chap.
Of course, if you think it might be beyond you...
That is the most transparent bit of persuasion I've heard in a long time.
I'm not surprised. I'm somewhat out of practice.
Well, why not?
You'll do it.
How many days did it take you?
3.
I've only got 1.
True enough.
And why are we wasting time here? Tell me about the victim.
Well, what do you want to know?
Everything. Give me all the facts.
His name was Fitzroy Macpherson. Late 20s, an athlete in his youth, but rheumatic fever left him with a weak heart, and he turned to science. He went swimming every day, whatever the weather. I often joined him.
Always in the same place?
Yes, more or less. Ah, here we are.
Is that the path down the cliff? The one you mentioned?
Yes. Stackhurst and I were about where we are now when we saw Macpherson. Mm.
What time was this?
About 7 in the morning. A stroll before breakfast.
What day of the week?
Tuesday.
The weather?
Why do you want to know?
Because it might be relevant, of course. And because it's what you would ask.
Very good, Watson. Still and calm.
The temperature?
Already warm and getting hotter. There had been a storm the night before, a real gale. But that morning, all nature was newly washed and fresh.
Cut out the poetry, Holmes.
Sorry. The weather was calm and clear. The day promised hot.
Very good. Now, you say you saw the victim. Where was the body lying?
It wasn't.
Holmes!
At that moment, Macpherson was still alive, though only just. Ah, stay here. I'm going to go down the path a short way. Don't move.
All right.
Can you see me?
No.
Very good. Now you're me.
Right.
This is what happened.
Good God.
Help me.
Wait. Don't move.
Excellent, Watson. My actions to the inch.
I thought you were supposed to be dead.
Not quite.
How close?
Very close.
Well, then.
Oh, sorry.
That's better. Now, are you in exactly the same position as he was?
Let me see. Face down, left arm outstretched, legs twisted. Yes, I am.
Good. Thank you.
But there is one important difference.
Go on.
Macpherson was naked from the waist up and wasn't wearing any shoes or socks.
Right. What happened next?
This.
And then he died.
I'm afraid there was nothing we could have done.
Must have been a horrible experience.
Yes, I can't deny it. I've seen more death than I care to remember, but this was particularly unpleasant.
Such a young man.
And on a morning that made one feel good to be alive.
Those words, I couldn't quite make them out. The lying man?
Now try to reproduce exactly what Stackhurst and I heard. Try again.
The linesman? No, surely not.
No, the only sense I could twist out of the sounds was the lion's mane.
The lion's mane? Mm. That's hardly more likely than my versions. What did it mean?
I had no idea. And so?
So, I remember it. And file it away for later. New information may well throw some light on it.
Bravo. Now, excuse me. Yes, that's better. Now, can I tell you anything more?
Of course you can. Was there any obvious cause of death?
The man had been flogged.
Logged?
His back was covered with dark red lines. There was long wheels curved right round his body.
My God. Still bleeding?
Oh, yes. The wounds were obviously fresh.
Anything else?
Blood all over his chin.
His chin?
He'd bitten through his lower lip with the pain.
So, he had just enough strength to get up the cliff path. You looked down onto the beach, of course.
Of course.
And?
It was deserted. Macpherson's footprints were perfectly clear. He'd come down the path with a spring in his step and staggered back up as much on his hands and knees as on his feet.
The erratic footprints. They started from here, at the bottom of the path?
Yes.
What about signs on the beach?
Oh, unfortunately, this shingle holds hardly any marks. Mm.
So you weren't able to read anything?
A little. A storm tide had left a sizable lagoon, bigger than usual. His intention was to use it for a swim.
But he didn't get that far.
He started to undress by these rocks. His towel and the rest of his clothes were still here, neatly folded, and there were a few bare footprints.
Do we know how long he was here?
According to Stackhurst, it couldn't have been longer than 10 minutes, or 15 at the most. He watched McPherson leave the school.
Right. Let me make sure I've got this. He came down the cliff path in high spirits. Put his towel down just here, took off his shoes, his socks and his shirt, and then he was